Good morning, everybody, and welcome to this remote hearing of the Health and Human Services Finance Division. As everybody knows, we're starting special session today, but we haven't started it yet. So this is not an, this is a, an informational hearing. It's official, but information only because we are not officially in session. So we can't vote on anything, pass anything out of committee today, at least at this time. So I just want to remind members to please mute your feeds, keep them muted, and raise your hand if you would like to ask a question, and then the CA or the CLA will take it down for us, and they will notify me. I have been notified that a quorum is present, and I'm going to ask Ms. Niedernhofer to just note the role so that if you don't hear your name mentioned, please let us know, and that way we'll move quickly through the roll call. Ms. Niedernhofer?
Okay, I have Liebling, Akam, Bierman, Cantrell, Franson, Hamilton, Jordan, Keel, Kunesh-Pudin, Olson, and Schultz.
Okay, if any members have not heard your name mentioned, please let Ms. Niedernhofer know so that we can note your presence for the minutes. And then just so members know, we're going to go, we're scheduled until 11:30. We have session at noon, so our intention is to get everyone off this call and plenty of time to sign in for session because we do need to sign in. We're asked to sign in 20 minutes before session begins. So with that, the first order of business is to approve the minutes for June 15th, which were sent out to everyone. And Representative Cantrell, would you move the minutes?
Yes, Madam Chair, so moved.
All right. Is there any discussion to the minutes? Seeing none, let's just unmute everyone for a moment. We'll do this by a voice vote, if you would, just to approve the minutes. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed, no. All right. Thank you very much. Minutes are approved. Okay, let's remute everyone so that we can be clear. So the first bill on the agenda for today for informational hearing is the MA Dental Provider Grants Bill, which is my bill. This is a bill that and it's essentially in the same form. It passed the Senate on the last night of the previous special session, and we never had an opportunity to take it up. This is a bill that I've been working on with Senator Benson. And so it appropriates $5 million of funding from the coronavirus relief funds to MA dental providers. And I know we all know on this committee that we reimburse very low for MA dental providers. In this pandemic, they have a particular problem, which is that they need to have a high level of PPE for all of the people that they're serving, obviously, because there's a high risk of contracting COVID when you're doing dental procedures on a patient. And yet they don't, there's no allowance in our fees for any additional payment for that PPE that they need to have to keep serving the patients. So that's what the bill is aimed at. We made a few technical changes since the special session, but it's essentially the same bill. And I should also not fail to mention that Representative Schumacher, Senator Marty also worked on this bill, and unfortunately we didn't have time to take it up last session, but we have with us today Dr. Michael Helgeson from Appletree, and he's going to speak to us a little bit about the bill. And welcome to the committee, Dr. Helgeson. Good to see you.
Great. I don't know if I'm in the same location on all your screens, but this is me waving my hand. So, Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Dr. Michael Helgeson, the CEO of Appletree Dental, which is one of Minnesota's largest medical assistance dental providers. So we operate 8 critical access dental centers throughout Minnesota, and we serve medically and dentally complex patients from 85 of the 87 counties in Minnesota. So our reach is far. Critical access providers are on the brink financially right now due to the combination of these higher PPE costs and the dramatic reduction in the scope of services that we can provide. I think it's important to understand that throughout the pandemic, we've been open providing emergency dental services that have kept thousands and thousands of patients out of hospital emergency rooms. So this bill is just an essential step to helping sustain not only critical access dental providers, but all the medical assistance providers that are continuing to serve during this pandemic. As you all know, we're working in patients' mouths every day, so we're at particularly high risk, and PPE is our lifeline. It's critically important. This bill specifically targets supplemental funding to medical assistance providers that meet certain criteria. And it's important, I think, for people to know that private insurance companies are providing help for providers serving private patients, very similar to what's in this bill. So there is some help in that regard. But right now, there's nothing for those of us serving medical assistance providers. So I just want to thank you so much, Representative Liebling and everyone else for this bill. And I urge you to strongly support it. And I would welcome any questions.
All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Helgeson. We also have Carissa Kemp from the Minnesota Dental Association. Welcome to the committee.
Hi, everybody. Like Representative Liebling said, my name is Carissa Kemp, and I am the Government Affairs Manager at the Minnesota Dental Association. And I'm testifying in support of this legislation today. And I really echo kind of the sentiment that Dr. Helgeson just shared with you. So thank you, Representative Liebling, for carrying this bill. We really appreciate it. We are very supportive of it when it was brought forward during last special session. Thank you to everyone on the committee for having me today. As many of you know, Minnesota has one of the lowest medical assistance reimbursement rates in the country for dental care. And when you take these low rates and you couple them with the increased costs of providing care because of the necessary PPE, it is putting access to care at risk. Dental clinics have not been immune to the economic impact of COVID-19. And as small businesses, they really are having to make difficult choices, but they want to continue to provide care for these patients. So we really believe that this legislation will be a critical step in protecting access to care for those patients who are on medical assistance. So we're really asking you all to support this bill. So thank you so much for having me.
All right. Well, thank you, Ms. Kemp. Are there any questions? I haven't seen any hands raised, and I haven't been told that there are any hands up. So I'll just wait a moment here. Okay, no discussion. Okay, I see Representative Munson is waving his hand. Go ahead, Representative Munson.
Thank you, Chair Liebling. I'm sorry I couldn't find the raise hand function on the Zoom call. Mr. Helgeson, I did have a question. I know that in going to the dentist before the pandemic, the providers certainly wore PPE all the time. Can you explain the difference between what we're doing in the pandemic for providers and what would normally be in place in such a heavily PPE environment, since the providers have worked so closely with patients in the past? Do they wear more PPE or more expensive PPE during these procedures that would require these extra costs to be covered?
Yes.
Dr. Helgeson.
Yes, it's a great question. And the answer is yes. The traditional PPE that is worn and the masks that are normally worn pre-pandemic are not sufficient to protect against the coronavirus. So the N95 masks are required. These are a higher level. They're called a respirator mask. They have to be fit tested, and they are the only type of mask that protects someone who's literally working in the face of a patient from transmission, and the transmissions are by aerosol. So it's not just the mask. There are face shield requirements. There are other changes to the gowning, donning and doffing the gowns. There are leaving spaces idle for periods of time for aerosols to settle. That reduces or increases the amount of time it takes to do the same procedures. So it's not just the out-of-pocket costs for all these additional protective equipment, it's also the lost efficiency
of having to have larger treatment times in order to create safe environments given the COVID-19. So I hope that addresses your question, and if not, take a follow-up.
Yeah, Madam Speaker,
all right.
Madam Chair, if I can have a follow-up.
Yeah. Representative Munson.
And maybe this is for Carissa Kemp too. Is there a new standard then for medical providers, for dental providers, that they dispose of the mask after every patient, or are they with the N95s, are they using them for multiple patients?
Dr. Helgeson?
Yes, I'll take that first, and if Carissa wants to jump in, certainly welcome. Actually, we are using infrared. At AppleTree, we're using the infrared systems that allow us to reuse the N95s. They tend to be worn extensively. Again, they're in very short supply. They're very costly. So everybody is doing everything they can in the healthcare environment to safely conserve those most costly PPE elements. But Carissa, do you want to add something to that?
Yes, we are really hearing a lot of different responses from our members. Like Dr. Helgeson said, the PPE shortage is very real, and it's unfortunately impacting every clinic very differently. But they are following the guidelines that are provided by the Minnesota Board of Dentistry on how to safely use their PPE. In terms of whether or not they're reusing it, I can't really speak to the dentists and what they're doing on that as much. We have been doing a survey to kind of find out about how COVID has been impacting our dental clinics, but that has not been a specific question that we asked that I'm aware of. But I can certainly follow up.
And I'm not sure if Dr. Helgeson, maybe you said this, but the cost per unit of PPE is going up too, right? Because of the shortage, yes. And there's competition and so on.
Yes, it's a great point. With supply and demand, the costs are way higher than they ever were for everything. You know, the gloves, everything has gone way up. So the $10 cap that's in this bill is certainly less than the typical cost, additional cost per visit. So it's a modest level of funding that's in the bill.
Okay, and Madam Chair, if I could just have a quick follow-up.
Right, Representative Munson, yeah, I've got a couple other questions now, but go ahead.
I think this is a good bill. I think that these dentists have been putting out so much money for extra PPE to keep their patients safe. But I'm afraid that if we're providing them $10 per patient, but with extra regulations or standards costing $25 per patient, is there anything in the bill that requires more of these providers, but of course pays less? Is there any extra standards that they must meet if they receive this money, or is it just $10 per patient to cover PPE?
So in the bill, there's no extra requirement. I think there might be a requirement that they intend to continue seeing Medicaid patients. You know, this is not intended to be some sort of retroactive just payment to people. This is targeted, although it's, you know, granted it's kind of a somewhat arbitrary amount, and Dr. Helgeson may be very right that it's not enough to really cover the extra costs. It's intended to be sort of an extra something to make sure that our Medicaid patients continue to have access, as Ms. Kemp said, that's the intent. This is the bill itself does not add any additional requirement. It's just an attempt to, you know, this is very similar actually to what we did in that fund for other health providers, and that we gave to the health department to give grants. That was an entirely $200 million bucket of money. And it was not our intention to exclude dentists from that, but somehow that is what ended up happening. So this is really the only thing that we've done for MA dentists. It's not even for all dentists, it's just for MA dentists.
Thank you.
Yeah, all right. I've got Representative Bierman and then Kunesh Padin, and then we'll move on to the next bill. Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So my questions were actually just answered mostly in this last conversation about the $10 coverage, if that was enough. So I understand that it's still quite low, but I did also want to ask on the PPE, and I understand the prices have gone up. Could you give us a sense of how much they've gone up? Are we looking at double the cost or five times the cost? And if you could share on that, Mr. Helgeson, that would be helpful.
Yeah, I Thank you. Yes, it's variable. You know, doubling, tripling is not uncommon.
Okay. And just one, Madam Chair, one quick follow-up. And I, maybe this is for you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious about, it was mentioned that Minnesota has one of the lowest dental care rates in the country. And I'm just wondering if you could give us a little background on why that is and what we could do to change that.
Well, Representative Bierman, this is a long-standing struggle that we've had. I mean, I don't think we can really go into that in this hearing.
Let me just say that
I and other members of this committee have wrestled with this for a very long time. I mean, I think the kind of the bottom line on this is probably just that it's really expensive, and anything that's really expensive, it's always a struggle to figure out how to fund it. And last session, we had, in the last budget, I should say, in 2019, we had a big proposal that from the governor's office to really change how we fund our Medicaid dental system. You know, it flows through PMAP providers and fee-for-service. It's just, it's a mess, not just okay. the fee. But the system. So it's really beyond the scope of this hearing, but thank you for your sure. interest. All right. Would love to have another member take that on because it really is something that needs a great deal of attention.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Kunesh-Podein.
Thank you. Interesting enough, I've had some dental work in the last 2 weeks and had to go in. Every time I went in, there was an additional fee for PPE that I had to pay. It's almost twice this modest request of $10 per visit. And at first I was like, you know, that's the cost of doing business. But when I saw the precautions that my dentist took and the equipment that she used, you know, the shield with the little light, and I mean, it was kind of, you know, out of this world looking equipment. And, you know, the continual changing of the gloves and unwrapping, you know, instrument after instrument. I definitely feel like this is an absolute great investment in our folks, especially those that are maybe wouldn't go to the dentist and get the kind of work that they need to sustain their own health. And, of course, dental health is paramount to overall health. So I'm almost wondering if that $10 isn't enough, and we're not going to go there today. But I just wanted to say that this absolutely is an important investment, and it's something that maybe we're going to have to look back and maybe refund down the road, especially as this pandemic continues. And we want to make sure that all Minnesotans, including children and our elderly, are getting the kind of dental care that they need to sustain their overall health to make it through this pandemic. So I just wanted to make that comment about I've seen it firsthand and I totally support this bill.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Representative Kunesh-Podein. So another member, thank you for that comment. Another member very interested in this topic, which delights me because it's one that's really important to me too. And so if you end up in the Senate, next session, you'll be a good partner to have there to work on this issue as well, probably with Representative Bierman. So, and me, of course. So, all right. Well, with that, thank you very much to our testifiers. Really appreciate your time today. And we will move on then to the next bill, which is, unfortunately, since these aren't filed bills, we don't have numbers to refer to, but this one is the Economic Assistance Waiver Extension Bill. And just as a little background, this is also another of mine. As you may remember, we in the last special session, we passed House File 105. It passed through this committee with unanimously, I think, if I remember right, and had to do with the waivers that the Department of Human Services has put forward under the peacetime emergency and giving the 60-day off ramp, if you remember, so that these things don't have to be shut down right away. And then some of them were extended through next session, through the fiscal year, in fact, so that counties could and DHS could work on them some more and see if they were things they wanted to ask to have continued permanently. Well, this bill is bringing another one of these that really had broad agreement at the end of this last special session as well, but wasn't ready in time. And so it got left off. So that's why we're bringing it this time. So it fits in that same bucket. And so we have here Emily Babcock from the Association of Minnesota Counties to just talk a little bit about this waiver request or waiver extension request, I should say. Ms. Babcock.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Liebling and members of the committee. I'm Emily Babcock. I'm the Health and Human Services Policy Analyst at the Association of Minnesota Counties. Thanks to all of you for considering this important legislation this morning. As you've heard previously from county members, waivers have been absolutely critical for counties to make sure that human services programming continues during this pandemic. We thank the committee for approving the extension of the 14 waivers until June 2021. And today we're asking for this one additional waiver, CV03, to be added to that list of waivers you've already approved. This waiver simply allows and extends the county's ability to conduct remote interviews with applicants of the Minnesota Family Investment Program, or MFIP. This would align the MFIP Economic Assistance Program with other human services programs such as SNAP and Medicaid that already allow for remote application. This extension would apply only to the application interview. This does not change eligibility requirements or the verification processes county staff conduct before someone enrolls in the program. Further, in order to maintain strong program integrity, applicants would need to sign the applications electronically instead of a simple verbal sign-off. For the electronic signature, residents who apply online already have the ability to sign via e-signature. We believe that there are still so many unknowns as the state continues to respond to COVID-19, and counties urge your support of this waiver extension so that counties can continue to respond to applicants seeking assistance through the counties. We believe this legislation is necessary now to be able to continue efficiencies, protect program integrity, improve access, and most importantly, protect the health of our staff and clients. Thank you again for your support of this legislation. We do look forward to coming back next year and working together to review this work and continue to identify some potential longer-term innovations. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Babcock. And you know, just to let members know, as you look at the language of the bill, there's a lot in here only because it's all existing language. And then what we're talking about here is just one additional paragraph that's being added to what we did last special session. And I just want to note for members that this language may end up tacked on to something else. You know, sometimes, especially in special session here, where we probably will not pass that many separate bills. The author of this in the Senate is Senator Abler, and this, just to kind of alert people, something else that's moving, for example, the dental bill that we just talked about could also become a vehicle for this little piece of language. And so the idea here is to have broad agreement across the caucuses on this, and so far, we haven't found anything controversial about it, but I'm sure Ms. Babcock would be happy to take questions if there are any. And I'm not seeing any. Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Ms. Babcock. And we will move on to the meatier part of this hearing, I would say, and that is Representative Cantrell's bill. And so again, we don't have a number for the bill yet, but I will let Representative Cantrell introduce your bill. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. So the bill that we're discussing today is the product so far of extensive conversations with our counterparts in the Senate to ensure that we set up a emergency funding program to stabilize adult day services, employment services, and the like. So this has really been the product of extensive conversation that that we've had with our counterparts and with stakeholders to make sure that ultimately, not only do we stabilize the financial solvency of these services, but ensure that that they are empowered to innovate and adapt to this this current point in time to ensure that folks are still able to receive a continuity of services, because ultimately that's that has to be our paramount concern, is ensuring that folks with disabilities in Minnesota are still able to get the services that that they need. So the bill is kind of broken up into two components. There's an initial retention grant, and that is intended to stabilize kind of as a lifeline the fixed costs of these service providers. And then there is a subsequent reinvention grant component, and that component is intended to ensure that whether it's you know, anything that eligible providers are doing to try and adapt their delivery model so that during the pandemic, folks are able to receive services that that they need. This has really been a really phenomenal process to work on. And I think that that we are close in terms of the policy framework, and this continues to kind of get hammered out, but this is really a good functional kind of draft for us to be discussing today. So with that, I will, I believe that there may be some testifiers, but I look forward to talking with the committee. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Cantrell. And so I see a question, but let's get the testifiers in, and then we'll, if that's okay, and then we'll have all the questions. So we've got Lynn Noren from RISE.
Yes, good morning, Chair Liebling and committee members. Good morning. My name is Lynn Noren, and I work at an organization called RISE. We provide a broad range of employment and life enrichment services to adults who have disabilities. First of all, we would like to thank Representative Cantrell and other members of the Minnesota House for all of their efforts in recent days to work with the stakeholders who care about the availability of these employment and life enrichment services. The bill before you today, we support the bill before you today, and we believe that it will help prevent the loss of access to these critical disability services. And we are testifying in strong support of the legislation. Minnesota and RISE, we have a long history of providing services to adults with disabilities so that they have meaningful options for employment and other day activities. We have also been continuously working to innovate and evolve our services to best support people with disabilities in Minnesota to live their very best lives. However, for Minnesotans with disabilities to have access to meaningful supports, we need a system of quality service and support providers. The approximately 100 nonprofit organizations that are located in communities all around the state that provide these employment and life enrichment supports have been facing significant hardship since we had to close down our organizations in mid-March. The closure has meant that for most organizations, we have lost between 85 and 90% of our monthly revenues while still incurring many fixed costs, including being able to provide the employment important benefit obligations to our staff team members. As providers, we are running out of financial resources to weather these past months of lost reimbursement. We are facing the very real reality that individuals with disabilities won't have robust employment and life enrichment supports to return to when it's safe for them to do so and when they choose to do so. The retainer payments and reinvention grants proposed in this legislation will help to avoid this and at the same time create opportunities for innovation. I will now turn to Julie Johnson to further explain the need for this support. Julie?
All right. Well, thank you very much, Ms. Noren. And Julie Johnson from Midwest Special Services, welcome. Please just introduce yourself.
Good morning, Chair Liebling and committee members. Thank you for allowing me to be here today. My name is Julie Johnson, and I work at an organization called MSS, or Midwest Special Services, that also provide employment and de-enrichment activity supports to adults with disabilities. I'm also the current president of the statewide association representing nonprofit organizations to provide de-employment services across the state. I would like to echo Ms. Noren's appreciation for the leadership and partnership of Representative Cantrell and other House members who have been working to advance this legislation in an effort to avoid loss of access to these important services for Minnesotans with disabilities. Those who provide disability, employment, and life enrichment services have been working in our communities across the state for many years to support Minnesotans with disabilities to explore innovative and evolving service options. Minnesota Special Session Chapter 2, the Human Services Reform Policy Omnibus Bill, passed just a few weeks ago, that many of you were involved with, contains important language specific to our goal as a state to continue to strengthen employment services available to Minnesotans with disabilities. However, given the multiple months that we have now experienced of limited to no revenue due to loss of services for COVID-19 service closures, these very nonprofit organizations like MSS who are working to strengthen these services are now instead planning for service closures and staff furloughs and layoffs. The retainer payments proposed in this legislation will help provide much needed emergency financial assistance and allow us to address some of the many fixed costs that we have been continuing to incur during these past months without any reimbursement. The reinvention grants proposed in this legislation will help us support and adapt service models so that we can move towards the next chapter of supporting Minnesotans with disabilities in their life and employment goals during and after this pandemic. I'm testifying today in strong support of this bill, and we ask for your help in ensuring passage of this legislation during this special session to help us avoid from coming back from this pandemic with a greatly weakened system of supports and services available to Minnesotans with disabilities as they pursue these important employment and day enrichment goals and activities. I would welcome answering any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Johnson. And we do have a couple of members with questions. So I have Representative Munson and then Representative Keel. So Representative Munson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Cantrell, thank you for bringing this bill forward. Spent a lot of time talking with people in my community about these important services. About 2 weeks ago, we found out that a group in Waterville in my district called Potential Unlimited and LCDS has permanently closed its doors because of the financial strain of the shutdown. And we also have an important group in Mankato called MRCI, which does employment for adults with disabilities, and it's really important for the community. But my understanding is that the Commissioner of Health did not apply for a waiver from the federal government to use CARES Act funding for this purpose. And your bill talks about having to spend the money in accordance with the CARES Act. Do you know, is this bill requiring the commissioner to apply for a grant or for a waiver, or is that all process already underway? Because I believe 35 other states did apply for a waiver, received a waiver, but Minnesota did not. Can you speak to that status?
Representative Cantrell.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Bunsen, for the question. So I believe what you are asking is, did the Minnesota Department of Human Services ask for or apply for the CMS waiver? And to answer that question, you know, I think that that is a somewhat kind of separate topic to what is being discussed within this bill, and I'll explain a little bit why. You know, Minnesota has a very unique structure in how medical assistance is structured for disability services, and every state actually has their own system. So at this point in time, you know, we have, at least within our capacity in the legislature, chosen to pursue this is the best option immediately to ensure that we are able to sustain the continuity of this of the disability support infrastructure. So I hear your question. I just want to make sure that that the two aren't necessarily being conflated.
Yeah, and you know what? I would like to actually jump in a little bit too here, Representative Munson, because and we do have DHS people on the call as well who can answer. But I think your question is that there's no waiver needed for the coronavirus fund use. So you asked about a waiver for the coronavirus funds. No, the waiver process that's been talked about that some other states have done is to use Medicaid funds in a way that isn't for services. The way we pay for Medicaid is by reimbursing for services. And the waiver would allow for them to be used in this sort of flat retention payment way. But in Minnesota, first of all, that would be general fund money that would be being used. Okay, money is money, but that's the different source of funding if that would happen that way. And I don't know if that would be available for something like the reinvention grants. So, and in Minnesota, importantly, the legislature has to approve that. In many states, as I understand it, the Medicaid director can just make that decision to use that money in a different way and go and apply to the feds for a waiver. Here, we'd have to pass that as a legislature to allow that to happen. So there are those barriers. And again, it would be using general fund money, Medicaid money, which with a federal match, but that's not what this bill is doing. I hope that clarifies that. And if anyone from DHS wants to add to that, I see we've got Elise Bailey on, they more than welcome to do that. But Representative Munson, does that answer your question?
Yeah, partially. Madam Chair, and I guess one of the concerns I have is to know whether or not this bill would be funded out of state funds or out of the CARES Act fund. Is it coming out of state or federal dollars? And is there anything that we should be doing at this point to request or to require a waiver to be requested? And then that would be, I guess, an amendment to the bill, if anything. But I'd like to know where the funds are coming from. Thank you.
Well, in this bill, the funds are coming from the coronavirus fund. That's certainly, money is money. And if we were going to use general fund money, we would have to do, the legislature would have to authorize it. But that's not what this bill is doing. This bill is, right now, as it's written, is using the federal funds in that, what we're calling the CRF. The Coronavirus Relief Fund. So, okay, we have Keel, Grunhagen, and Knorr. So, Representative Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Representative Cantrell, thank you for bringing this forward. I'm a little disappointed that we didn't do the Senate file 122 that was passed last special session, but we're here now. So I'm very thankful that we are addressing the disabilities community. I unfortunately have heard that three have absolutely shut down. My question is, and I'll let the chair decide who should answer it, but with the disability services actually having challenges even serving these clients, how much of it can be right now provided face-to-face contact? And are there examples of providers that are successfully altering their services? Because my understanding is no one's getting any funds because they are not treating these, working with these clients. So understanding that they're not successfully being able to help people. And I would like to know if anybody has been able to successfully alter their services to deliver services during COVID-19.
So I think maybe we could start with Ms. Bailey from DHS, because she would, even though we have these providers on and they could probably speak to their situations, but she can maybe start by giving us a more of an overview of all of the providers. Ms. Bailey, if you could do that.
Hey, Chair and members of the committee, my name is Elise Bailey. I'm the Fiscal Policy Director for the department. We are currently assessing in our data throughout the pandemic how much service has been provided, but we have had several waivers that we've put forth that enabled remote provision and one-on-one provision. Providers can certainly provide employment services in the community. So there's several different ways that the providers could continue to provide services. And recently, you know, we've opened up the ability to provide day services to people who were living in their own homes, and then open up the ability to provide services to people who are living in congregate settings. So, you know, there's been some changes throughout the pandemic, and we're trying to be as nimble as we can to enable service provision. So I think it wouldn't necessarily be true to say that no service is being provided, but that it really depends on the services that each individual person needs and the ability that the provider has to serve those clients.
Thank you. And I wonder if Ms. Johnson or Ms. Noren, did you want to respond to that at all? Ms. Johnson, please go ahead.
Sure. Chair Liebling and committee members, MSS, our organization, has been providing remote services to individuals throughout the pandemic. They're done on a very limited basis, and there's a lot of collaboration between group homes and service providers. And we are also serving on a limited basis 3 hours a day, individuals that are living in their own home, only individuals who are not at risk at 50% capacity. So in my organization, for example, out of the 550 people we support right now, we're providing services to 40, but a new flexibility was released by DHS yesterday that would allow us to support people in who live in congregate settings. I don't know, because that just happened yesterday, what that would look like for us. But many of the individuals I support in my organization and many others support are in the at-risk category. So it will take some time and some phased-in process before we can serve all of the people that we traditionally support.
Thank you. Representative Keel, did you have a follow-up?
Yes. Sorry, I thought I had my phone down, so. Anyway, yes, I do. I have some real concerns, you know, with rural providers, DTNHs. It is really challenging. I've talked to one that right off the bat cannot serve 12 of her people. You know, these are small. I get this. This is rural, and it is small. I don't know how many of them are going to be able to go outside of their facility in order to do any jobs at all because of the restrictions. The requirements, my understanding from DHS, is that it's only 50%. They're looking at doing like half days for everybody that can actually come in, which isn't many. And I know my parents or family members are also calling, saying this is becoming extremely difficult for those people who really thrive on consistency of schedules. And I think we need to work a little bit more with it. I think there are some realities in rural Minnesota that are not as easily handled. There's less resources, and there is a difficulty even keeping people on staff because, you know, we're looking for jobs everywhere, people everywhere to work. So I have some real concerns about this. I'm really thankful that we are funding this because we should have been earlier. I've talked to my DTNHs who said they haven't had any funding since March 18th. Remember, all of their costs are still there. Their insurance, they can't, they've done what they can. And we need to really address this issue, especially with having lost some already. It makes me wonder what will happen to those family members or those people who need services, and what's going to happen just in general, because they need that guidance in order to go to work, to be able to do things. There's a lot of things they can do in-house, but they can't put people together. And then, of course, you've got some that don't understand that they need to keep distance or keep their mask on or those types of things. I ran into somebody at a park the other day, and immediately I get a hug from this gal, always. So I was really expecting that she would come and walking up to me, and her mother, of course, kind of hung on to her a little bit, but and she seemed to understand. We talked a while, and desperately wants to go back. So I think they're going to work that out for her. But many people are over 65 or in those thresholds. So there's some real problems there. I'm wondering if there's other things that we can do for these providers so we can strengthen them and keep them existing, because I got a feeling in this group, this is going to take a while. So I think we need to keep thinking. But thank you.
Okay, thank you, Representative Keel. So I have now Representatives Grunhagen, Knorr, and Akam. So let's go to Representative Grunhagen.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks, Representative Cantrell, for bringing this forward. Representative Keel answered some of my questions, but Madam Chair, I have a question for you. What is the path for this bill? Is it complementary to SF-122? Is the funding mechanism different, do you know? And I've heard from my disability services also, and they're really hurting. And I'd like to see some funding get to them also. Is it going to be dealt with this special session, or aren't you aware yet?
So thank you for the question, Representative Grunhagen. So I have been told that all three of the bills that we're giving informational hearings to today will be heard tomorrow in Ways and Means.
Okay.
So it is our intention. We're not putting these forward just to admire them. We're putting them forward to try to get them through. And that does give me a moment to just say, and I think it's 133. It was Senate File 133 that was passed at the end of the last special session. After the Senate passed that bill, we were notified by MMB that they put on a last second amendment on the bill, and we were told that the amendment made the bill unable to be implemented. So, you know, besides the fact that this, we had never had a hearing in on our side, that the bill that they wrote was not, you know, we had had no input, and, you know, but it also was a bill that literally we were told could not be implemented if it was passed. So I know that a lot of the you know, people have been contacting us and saying, please pass this bill, we need this bill, we need this bill, but this bill was not a bill that actually worked. So we get the issue, we get the, you know, Representative Hunt Cantrell's been working very hard to figure out how to get this to work. I can't say that we have, that it's 100%, you know, I can't tell you the future of the bill because there is still negotiation left to happen. But clearly we are sympathetic to the issue, the problem. We in this committee have, you know, we understand a lot more than probably the broader legislature about what these services mean to people, because mm-hmm. we hear from the disability community, and, you know, this is something over many years. So I know the members of this committee are pretty keyed into the issue. All of us are. And honestly, Representative Cantrell's done just a huge amount of work, and with Senator Abler, and there's just an enormous amount of work that's gone into this. And, you know, just from my experience, there's probably more work to do.
Okay.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, hey, thanks for that update. And do you think that it'll be dealt with in the special session? And if you're not sure, which I understand, I'd appreciate any efforts you can make to highlight this and to bring it about. Sounds like there'd have to be a conference committee on it, possibly, but maybe that can be expedited. I don't know.
You know, Representative Grunhagen, in special session now, I mean, all our processes, look what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
Our processes are kind of a little bit blown up, right? This isn't our normal process to give an informational hearing and then have it heard in Ways and Means. And yet, this is the best we can do. We are, we are committed to doing something here. And whether it's a, I doubt it'll be a conference committee. I saw Representative Cantrell kind of shaking his head. We're kind of pre-conferencing it as best we can because we're trying to get a consensus bill. And what you have in front of you is, you know, there may be technical things, but it's pretty close to a consensus because we've been working on that very hard.
Well, thank you. And thank Representative Cantrell for your efforts on this. And I certainly will do anything I can to help you move it along.
Thank you, Representative Bernhagen. Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Thank you so much, Representative Cantrell. I think, as you stated, Madam Chair, we're committed to getting this work done. I know that there are many programs that are impacted by this bill. I just wanted to know a few things. So the innovation and modifications for those entities that have been impacted that Representative Cantrell talked about, are we going to be more specific based on the guidance that DHS issued just the other day? And also, how many programs, how many entities will benefit from these programs? And if it's a grant process, are we going to make sure that we reach out to impacted entities so that they can apply?
Do you know
any of those answers?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Knorr, for your question. So, trying to think here. So, I'll kind of answer them almost in a reverse way. So, your question as to how many entities can apply or how many entities could benefit, I would argue that anyone who meets eligibility requirements within the bill in terms of being an eligible service provider can benefit from or potentially benefit from applying for a grant through this bill process. And as to your question about the way that the innovation grants are structured, you know, we've really received an extensive amount of technical assistance along the way on this. So as Chair Liebling stated, you know, there may be some small components of technical assistance that have yet to come in terms of the policy framework. However, this has been something that has been structured with all the various factors in mind. So I want to say that for sure. But does that answer all your questions, Representative or Madam Chair, Representative Knorr?
Thank you, Representative Cantrell. Madam Chair, I will follow up with Representative Cantrell and figure out some of the other components of the bill. Thank you so much, Chair.
All right. Thank you, Representative Knorr. Representative Akam.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Cantrell, for bringing this bill forward. And, you know, some of you may know that my husband lives with disabilities, and while he does not access day services or employment programs, I do understand and recognize the importance of having these services in place for people, not only for all sorts of things regarding their quality of life. And so I've been reached out to by many people in my community that do access them. And so this is certainly an important program that I feel strongly about. And so I'm really glad to see that you've been able to put together this bill. I have just a couple of questions. And Representative Cantrell, one of the things that you mentioned in your statements at the beginning was that you're close in the policy framework, and wondering if you can share where the sticking points still are in coming up with a compromise with the Senate.
Representative Cantrell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Akam, for your question. Let me rephrase what I stated at the beginning of this bill presentation. It isn't so much that there are sticking points. It's just that there is a natural process to putting together a bill with multiple legislative parties involved. And so at this point, I believe it's essentially just technical assistance that needs to be just agreed to mutually. But other than that, I would say that we're I don't think that there's a difference really personally between the bill draft before us today and where we're at with our Senate counterparts.
Representative Akam.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And so then there is a Senate companion, is that correct then? Or there would be without, I understand, we've had conversations this morning about Senate File 133 and understanding the differences with that. So is there a Senate bill that is structured as this one is?
Representative Cantrell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Akam. It's my understanding that that the final bill language that we come to consensus on is going to be a delete everything amendment that will be attached to a bill that is about to be introduced in the Senate that's going to be a vehicle for this language. So kind of circuitous way of answering yes to your question. Yes, there's equivalent language in the Senate.
That's great. And then I have just one final quick question.
Representative Akam.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. And that is with the announcement that was made yesterday about the day services being allowed to open, does that in any way impact your bill? And if day services are open and clients start to receive services or go back to receive services, will that prevent them from receiving the retention grants or the reinvention grants? And then kind of similar to that, if there are clientele who are maybe part of the vulnerable population that we've been talking about that maybe shouldn't be face-to-face, and so would they, because they can open in any way, does that impact their eligibility, really is what I'm asking.
Representative Cantrell.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Akam. You know as well as I do that things are in a constant state of fluctuation, right, in this time that we're in right now. So I can't, I won't pretend to have a crystal ball to say how everything is going to be impacted as policy decisions continue to change. But I will say that our bill is not structured to be in any way punitive to day service programs that offer services and that orient around new guidance and new policies as time goes on, because who knows what the immediate future is going to hold as we continue to progress through this pandemic. So that would be my response.
So then just for me to understand, so as it is today, with the way things are today, they would still be eligible to receive services or receive grants?
Yeah, Representative Akam, the bill actually says that they can continue to bill for services. And one of the issues here, and it's been alluded to in the testimony and in the previous discussion, is that even if there were no restrictions on giving the services, just like so many other places, people are nervous about coming back. People are nervous about bringing their loved ones who are, many of them very vulnerable to the virus. And so, you can say open all the restaurants, but are people going to go and resume life as before? No. I mean, I think that's really clear. And so in this population, I think a lot of families and a lot of individuals are struggling to balance their health and their need to resume their normality and have their life back. And, just as frankly, I think probably everyone is. So, even if there was no restriction coming from DHS on their ability to provide services, it's not going to be normal. They're not going to, since they bill on a service provided basis, there's no way they're going to be back to normal anytime soon. It's just not going to happen. And so the bill, as I understand it, Representative Cantrell can correct me if I'm misstating it, but it's really structured to be able to not only sort of give an immediate influx, an immediate injection of income just to kind of meet the emergency urgent need so they don't close, but also to help them reinvent to meet the needs, because we're kind of all assuming that this is going to be ongoing for a while. And so every organization really has to reinvent itself. And it's really hard to do that without any additional financial help, especially when their regular revenues have gone through the floor. So that's the I think what we're trying to accomplish.
I think here. 20 minutes of fucking service, you fuck.
Excuse me, but somebody's unmuted.
I'm off.
Okay.
I really appreciate that, Madam Chair. That's helpful and reassuring, so I appreciate your statement.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Akam. So let's see, Representative Keel. Oh, you're muted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay. There we go. I wanted to point something out. I realize we need to get going, but one thing about Senate file, thanks for correcting that, by the way, 133 did have some other supports in it for other groups. One was the non-medical emergency transportation, and I'm really hoping that Chair Liebling, we can have some conversation about that. We're really having a hard time. They're kind of hanging by the end of their thumbnails. And I, when I look at the real rural areas, the challenges of getting people that need to go to dialysis or cancer treatments or whatever, that are so far away from family that, you know, don't have anybody that can transport them. There is some funding that needs to be fixed there. I would hope we can have a conversation about that. I realize that dropped off from this bill. But if my understanding is too, so that members know that the Senate, as Representative Cantrell said, that they are definitely working on trying to get this passed so that we can fund day activities and a few things. But we lost some more support systems for other groups too. And I think while we can't be the be all end all for everything, we really do need to look at those situations because they've been shut down because we're talking about a vulnerable group of people. And we need to make sure that as normal as we can get, which we all know is going to be very normal, that we can get some of these services up. I think it will help mental health as well as success for these groups that we want to continue long after we get past COVID-19. But I just want to put in, I would like to see us be able to have more conversation about this NEMT group and seeing if we can't do something to help them as we move forward.
Representative Cantrell, did you want to comment on that? You don't have to if you're not prepared to, but.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Keel. And what, you know, what I can say is that I think all of us share a commitment to ensuring that that folks with disabilities in Minnesota and the services infrastructure that supports them is, you know, it's I think one of our paramount concerns during this pandemic, and I also think outside of this pandemic. So ensuring that we in all arenas of how we navigate through this COVID-19 pandemic. I think it's imperative that we all consider how we can ensure to the greatest extent possible that we do the most good. So your point is noted, and I certainly appreciate it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Right,
Madam
Chair. Thank you. Representative Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you give me any guideline? Do you think there can be any hearings or conversation about NEMTs and some of the other groups that may have fallen off the wagon, so to speak?
So, Representative Keel, the one thing I can tell you is that we saw a financial analysis after that bill was passed by the Senate that, you know, that bill had in it sort of two levels of grants, and it had a bunch of different providers in there. And mm-hmm. we were told that there would have not been enough money for anything in the second round. That the money would have all been taken up in the first round. So the other thing I can tell you is that while it may feel like we're just spending other people's money here and don't have any real, we could just spend, I think there's great concern that with the pandemic, possibly another wave coming, if we look at other states and we see, you know, as well as Minnesota's done, I think there's a real concern that we are going to have to be really careful with how we spend money. And I am in no way contradicting what you just said about needs that are out there. But, uh-huh. You know, in this special session, My understanding of how this is going to go is that our time is extremely short. Okay. And I'm just not seeing, you know, how we're going to be able to. It's not like a normal session where we've got time and we can all bring amendments and we can all bring in different providers. And we're kind of, you know, doing the what we know we can kind of all come around together around. And I hear you, but I actually if I put my crystal ball in front of me, I don't think that's happening during this session, this special session.
Could it be a possibility, should there be another one? I'm not promoting one, by the way. If there is more conversation about other things that are coming forward, can we consider, I would request that we consider looking at this situation.
Well, anything's possible, Representative Keel.
Yes. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I'm not seeing any other questions. So I think, first of all, I want to thank Representative Cantrell for his hard work. He really has put in a lot of hours on this, and thank all the others who have worked with him. Our staff have been just amazing. And so Patrick McQuillan, who's our CA for this committee, has just really worked hard, even putting this hearing together on really short notice. Really want to acknowledge him for that. And Chris McCall, who's also the CA for the Health Policy Committee, has done a tremendous amount of work on this issue as well. Representative Schultz has been working right along on this too. So I really appreciate that. Thank you very much to the testifiers for being here today. We really appreciate your input. And to the other staff on the call and everyone, to the members, we really appreciate your time. We are actually a little bit ahead of schedule, which is pretty amazing, but I'm not seeing any more questions or discussions. So with that, we are adjourned. Thank you, members.